So look, if you want to grow your wealth, your income, and increase the amount of time off, then these are the shortcuts that can help. Welcome to the Wealth Creation Podcast. And good morning, everybody. It's Dan Latter. We are live. Welcome. Today is probably Thursday. So in today's podcast, we're going to go through 10 money rules. Let me just pull up my notes here. 10 money rules that you should follow. So, look, money is such a taboo subject. Every time we talk about it, it's just a taboo subject. I don't know why. And I want to be able to bring money into the forefront so that people can actually talk about money a little bit more, because it's like, you know, Zig Ziglar said, it's right up there next to oxygen. And it's absolutely true. It's not the love of money. It's not any of that kind of thing. It's not the Ferrari. It's not the Lambo. It's just the fact that you no longer have to worry about people knocking on your door, bailiffs coming and taking your cars, all that kind of thing. That's what I've had in my life, and never wanted to go down that path ever again. And so that's why we started investing, and we've been doing it for 20 years. And of course, when you start investing, nothing happens for ages, and then suddenly it starts going up, and then it goes whoosh, and then it goes up, and it's like the tipping point. So you know where you've got two buckets filling with water, and it's like that for a little bit, but one's filling up just slightly more than the other, and at some point it's going to go woof like that, and it's going to go. And that's what we want for your money. You should be as debt-free as possible, good debt. You should have some bad debt, that's fine, because we call that leverage, and that's what we use to invest in property with, that's fine as well. But look, I've got 10 rules or 10 points that I think you should follow that will actually help you on your journey to financial freedom. So let's go through them. So number one, never buy depreciating stuff on credit. So we talked about this a couple of days ago in a podcast, you know, where you buy a car for £25,000 and you're getting a loan. Oh, it was 20 grand, actually. You buy a car for 20 grand, but you're getting a loan, which after 4 years is costing you 25 grand. And at the end of 4 years, that £20,000 car, don't know what I'm looking at a car for. I should get a little toy car, shouldn't I? So I can always use it. But 20 grand car is worth maybe £12,000. So you've spent 25 grand in 4 years' time to have something that's only worth £12,000. Whereas if you'd have bought a property with that 25 grand deposit, that's assuming you've got the 25 grand in one lump, which you haven't, because that's why you got a loan for the car in the first place. But forget about that for a second. But if you had the £25,000, and you put it into a £100,000 house and it made you £200 a month. £200 a month is £2,400. Times that by 4 years is about 10 grand. So you would actually have £10,000 coming back out of that. Plus, hopefully, the house will have gone up somewhat in that 4 years. That's not guaranteed. But certainly over the next 10 or 20 years, that's definitely guaranteed, right? Like, let me just rephrase that. Nothing is guaranteed. There's an increase in probability that that's going to happen. We never use the word guarantee because there is no guarantee. I guarantee the moon is still there. I don't know. I can't see it. It's a very, very high probability. One in a quadrillion. I don't know what that is. There's a very, very high probability that it's likely to be there. There's also a chance it might not be, but we don't work in guarantees, right? Quantum physics tells us that there's no guarantee that the moon is there. So never buy stuff on credit. You know, like, I mean, I've had nights out on credit. Do you know what I mean? Like, use your credit card, and then you're paying for that night out, like, 4 years later, like, 20% on top. You know, imagine going out for a night out thinking, I'm going to spend 50 quid, but actually it's going to cost you £60 because that's the credit. Like, it's crazy. That's another 20%. Why would you do that? So, and I've done it with clothes. We've definitely done it with cars. But you should never buy depreciating stuff on credit, because the thing goes down in value, and the thing that you use to buy it's going up, and this is why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Nothing to do with Tony Blair or Gordon Brown or Theresa May, although they are responsible for some of this, but your responsibility lies with you. You know you shouldn't be buying depreciating stuff using credit. You know that. So what the hell are you doing it for? Why have you got a car on credit? Oh, well, it's for my business. It needs to look good. Well, if it's for your business, you should be leasing that so you can offset the cost of a lease against your profit and your business and make you more tax efficient. You shouldn't be owning that car. So, and of course, we can't give financial advice here. We can only say what I would do if it was my money. We do that as a little caveat every so often, just so that we don't get beat up for giving financial advice. which we're not allowed to give. So let me just check here. Oh, yeah. Good morning, Tony. Hope you're well. You're on a different screen, so I'm not looking. Okay, so number two, invest at least 10% of your income as early as possible. Now, what this means is that, like, when you're 20, start learning to take away 10%. Like, I actually think that you should be teaching your kids this before they get to 20. So Lucia, my daughter, she's 4, and we're just giving her pocket money. And we, you know, she puts the pocket money into all of it into a savings jar so she can see it build up, and then she can buy something big, a Paw Patrol toy, she can buy something big with that money. So it's teaching her to save up and then buy something big with it. And actually, when I think about it, I could probably do with reading more books about how to teach your kids how to be financially astute, because I know how to be financially astute, but how do you teach a 4-year-old who doesn't know what money is, who doesn't know that 10 pence is more than 10 pounds, right? Like, how do you teach a 4-year-old that? I don't know. But you need to be personally starting to invest at least, listen to the words, at least 10% as early as you can. Like, I think it should be 20 or 30%. I saw a meme by by Kai Lopez yesterday, and he was talking about a third, a third, and a third. And it was like a third working on your own stuff, or a third hanging out by yourself, a third hanging out with people doing better than you, and a third helping people below you. And I kind of get that, but it's very similar to the money. You know, the third should go on your expenses, on your money that you need to live and eat. Another third should go on investments or savings, okay? And the other third, I don't know what you do with the other third. You would build a business with it. Something like that, a side hustle where you're putting, so you've got a third for your expenses. And if you can't afford to live on a third, you need to cut your expenses. A third going into investments, like 33%, and another 33% going into a business that you can build up that will generate more cash. That more cash comes back in, you do a third, and a third, your whole lifestyle increases, okay? So, but at the very minimum, start investing at least 10%. Like now, today, right now, start saving 10%. And just scratch that word saving, because we don't want to save it, we want to invest it. Get yourself onto Vanguard, FTSE 100, where it just tracks it. Go see your financial advisor, go get some financial advice about where that should go, what is most efficient. It's Vanguard. read the book by Tony Robbins called Money. That will tell you right there. But start reading up and educate yourself as to where you can start putting this 10%. Okay, number three, track your expenses and track your income. We had some more cash come through this morning. It's always nice when you wake up and it's ka-ching, more money's come in. Great. So we can use that money to help another client's business, which is awesome. I get very excited by that. But like the first thing I did, the money came in, I go to the spreadsheet, I update the spreadsheet. On every piece of income that comes in, I go to the spreadsheet, I update the spreadsheet. I am beyond anal about updating this spreadsheet. It drives my wife nuts. It drives my clients nuts, because I'm telling them, why aren't you doing this? This is one of the requisites for success. You've got to track your income. And then you've got to be tracking your outgoings. So we woke up as well, and we had some money going out. We had some mortgages going out. We had some other bills going out for, like, I don't know, Empower. We got a guy that we owe some money for handyman work. All that money has to go out. That's all been done, all been paid, so it's up to date. So I'm going into the day knowing what my bottom line's looking like, knowing what my profit and loss is looking like for this month, which then allows me to forecast for next month and next month and next month, then allows me to forecast, okay, that investment there, I'd like to buy that in 4 months' time, but I need to earn X amount of pounds. Okay, so let's do it. Let's say it's a 10 grand investment and I want to invest in it in 4 months' time. That's great. I need to be earning 2.5 grand. How's that looking like on my spreadsheet? Can I do that? What extra business do I need to close in order to make that a reality? Okay, let's go do that. Let's say it's 10 websites at 250 quid. Great, that's a lot of websites. But if that's what needs to happen every month for 4 months to get that investment, then that's fine. I know what I need to be doing. And if I don't get that, there's nobody else for me to blame. It's my fault. I'm responsible. Let me just rephrase that. No one is to blame, but you are responsible. You take responsibility for your finances. You need to know what's coming in and you need to know what's going out every single day. Next one, don't make financial decisions with emotions. So I've done this so many times. Do as I say, not as I do. The flat that we bought for £250,000, thinking, oh, look at me, aren't I great, £250,000. Still worth 180, 190, 200 on a really good day that's really sunny and all the birds are singing. You know, I bought that £250,000 flat. It's in Leeds, that's an expensive flat. And I bought it like 10 years ago. And it's still not recovered from 2008. Still, because I bought it overpriced because I bought it on emotion. Crazy. Why I did that? Like the benefit of being older and looking back at your mistakes. But this is one of the reasons why we're in a position to do the podcast is because we've made these mistakes. And when we look back, we're like, don't do that, folks. Don't buy stuff based on emotion. The Porsche 911 that I bought for £42,500, that was 15 years ago. Goodness me. So when I think about that, I bought that on emotion too. That wasn't a clever decision. I didn't even negotiate on that. I put 10 grand down and then I financed the rest over 4 years. I didn't even negotiate on that deal. I just went, yeah, I'll have it because I wanted it. And it's such a bad idea. If you're going to buy something based on emotion, make it flowers. Do you know what I mean? For someone else, make it something small. Make it something that's not going to change your entire life. You know, that 10 grand down 15 years ago, if I'd have put that into by 15 years ago, you could get like 85% mortgages, right? So if I'd have bought a 70 grand house, I'd be earning £200 a month for the last 15 years. Like, let's do the maths on that. Shall we get really depressed? Yeah, let's get really depressed. £200 a month times 12, times that by 15. £36,000 is what that 10 grand cost me. That's crazy. £36,000. All because I bought a Porsche worth slightly more than that. And then I sold the car for 42 and a half. I sold it for £28,000. I lost 14 grand on it. So right there, straight off the cuff, that car cost me £50,000. And then what about the interest on the loan? This is going back to number one, never buy depreciating stuff on credit. So what about the interest on that loan? That must have cost, what, another 5 grand, maybe 6 or 7, £57,000. That's how much that car cost me. That's just completely ridiculous. Forget about tyres. Tyres cost me like £1,800. It's just ridiculous. It's just such a bad idea. You shouldn't do it. Okay, so where are we up to? Don't make financial decisions with emotions. Oh, that's so depressing. Okay. stop trying to get rich quick. Number five, stop trying to get rich quick without effort. So every so often I fall into this little path. We try and do Forex. Forex is one of the hardest things I've ever done, and you do really well, and then bang, you lose it all. And it's because you're just trying to get rich quick without actually putting work in. The whole Bitcoin thing. I think Bitcoin will come back, by the way. But the whole Bitcoin thing, which ended up to be a scam, like that was a really bad idea. Because we're trying to get rich or wealthier through not actually doing any work. And think about this. Like, the universe is in a balance. Okay, imagine Padawan, Grasshopper, but the universe is in balance. Yin and yang, okay? You like light and dark, like good and evil, like I'm trying to think of other opposites. The universe is in balance, and what you put into a system is what you're going to get out of the system, okay? Do you think Mark Zuckerberg didn't work in order to create Facebook? Of course he blooming well worked. He had no other choice than to work. It's what he had to do. He had to work in order to make Facebook the thing that it is. And anybody who's done anything, The Rock, do you think The Rock works hard? Do you think what he puts in is what he gets out? Completely. If I went down to the gym every single day and lifted heavy weights for an hour every single day, do you think I'll get the results in 6 to 12 months? Of course. Or is there a quick, cheaty way of doing that? No. Stop trying to get rich quick without effort. The effort will equal, not always, will equal your results. But it's effort plus like having some brains about what you're doing and having a strategy and all these other little things that run on the periphery. But the one thing you can control is the amount of effort that you're going to put in. And if you're not putting the effort in, if you think you're going to start buying properties as a property sourcer by putting a couple of adverts out and not speaking to anyone, you're very much mistaken. The amount of effort that you've got to put into something is phenomenal. Like when you have a big boulder, to move the boulder takes more energy than to push a boulder that's already moving. So if you've not started something, it does take a lot of effort. I love the bit in Grant's book, 10X Rule, where he's like, if you think it's going to take this amount of energy to set up a business, 10X it, because it's going to take you a heck of a lot more. And it's absolutely true. Anything worth doing is going to take a lot of energy. Now, you might go, oh, I just can't be bothered. It's just not worth it. I can tell you it is 100% worth it. Because when you reach the point where you have residual money coming in each month, and you're looking at your income and outgoings, and every month is positive, and every month you can look at, okay, where we're going to invest, where do we want the money to go? When you get to that stage, you will realize just how worth it actually is. Okay, next one. Number six, always do your research before investing. Talk about Warren Buffett for a minute. Warren Buffett reads like, I don't know, I can't remember the number, between 10 and 30 company reports every single day. Like something ridiculous like that, okay? Imagine it's 10. Let's just go with 10. I think he reads 2,000 a year, something like that. 2,000 a year divided by, maybe it's only two, maybe it's three. Anyway, doesn't matter. But he researches and then he researches and then he researches. He researches everything he does before he goes into a deal. And he only invests in things that he actually understands. So he doesn't invest in anything.com. He did invest in iTunes when he pulled back out. But he doesn't invest in anything.com. He invests in things that are consumable that people reuse again and again. So Coca-Cola, Heinz, like salad cream and ketchup, those kind of businesses. Bear in mind, he's got a lot of businesses. But they're the ones that he does with high profit margins that pay high dividends. And that's one of the reasons why he makes so much money. And Bill Gates asked Warren Buffett, why don't people invest like you do? And he said, it's because people don't want to get rich slow. They want to get rich fast, and it's what trips them up. But you've got to do your research, and most people aren't doing the research. You should be, if you want to get into property sourcing, for example, you need to be eating it, sleeping it, dreaming it, talking about it with your partner, talking about it to your dog and your kids and your friends, and winding everybody up about what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and why it's so good. When I first started investing in property 20 years ago, that's exactly what I did. I just went on and on and on and on and on about property, and everyone was telling me not to do it, but I researched everything. So I knew in my circle of friends 20 years ago, we didn't have the internet or shoes, and we lived in black and white, of course, in the 50s. So, but when I first got invested in property, I researched everything. And to the outsider looking in, one, I looked like a know-it-all because I did, right? Or I knew more than they did, which was nothing, so I knew a lot more. There were no books, hardly any books. And I had to read the Financial Times. And, like, you don't get financial information from the Financial Times, by the way. If you're taking advice from the Financial Times, you're going to be poor. Like, I know that sounds like an oxymoron. But, like, why, if a Financial Times journalist is so good, why are the journalists having to make a living working for the Financial Times? It doesn't make sense to me. The Wall Street Journal, if that's where you're getting your financial advice from, you're going to fail. Yeah, it's great to get all the data, but now you get it off online anyway. You don't take your information and your advice from the Wall Street Journal. You can read the information in the Wall Street Journal and add it to the information you've already got, but you're not making a sole decision based on Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, The Times, The Guardian, Money Section. I used to think that that's what, you know, I would always get The Times and read The Money Section. Always. And The Guardian, I would read The Money Section. I would always read Money Sections. And then I realized that the people writing for this company on a salary don't know as much as I do, who's actually in the trenches trying to buy deals, negotiating on discounts and working out what my return on income is going to be. Okay, so you've got to start doing your research. And like I say, you need to be eating it, sleeping it, dreaming about it. You've got to annoy everybody around you. And that's when you know that you've researched it enough. And then at some point, you've got to pull the trigger and you've got to buy the asset, the investment, the build the business, start the business, whatever that needs to be. And then you're going to keep on researching while you're going down that process. Okay, next one, number seven. Yes, number seven, have an emergency fund. Like, like, this is not massive for me, but we got credit cards. So if something hits the fan, then we've got credit cards that we can use if necessary. But luckily, because we just have to wait to the end of the month, more cash comes in. And what happens when you have an excess of cash is that you can decide where that money is going to go anyway. So if there is a problem, usually you can redirect some of that cash, put some people off. You can just move it around. But if you're not in that position yet, you want to start building up some sort of an emergency fund. Ideally, 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. Because what happens if you lose your job and that's your sole point of income, and then you're saving, you know, $2,000 a month, but your lifestyle's $3,000 a month, and you've got 3 months worth, so you've got $6,000. In 2 months, you've now run through all your savings, right? Because you lost your job. Like, this idea about having one source of income is very scary for me. That's why we have multiple sources of income. But having one job where you could lose that job, like people used to say to me, you know, it's a full-time job going to get jobs. But I always knew I could go get another job because I've gone for that many jobs. I've done that many interviews. I was really good at doing interviews. So I'd built that skill set up, the skill set of going to get interviews. So I knew I would never, ever be outside of a job. I would go for job interview after job interview after job interview, even interviews for jobs I didn't even want. I would go do it because I knew I'd get experience. And by the way, this is how I did my dating. I used to go out on so many dates before I met my wife. I was so many dates because I wanted to learn what to say, what not to say. I wanted to get really good at being on a date so that I would always get the next date if I chose to do that. So how does that refer to an emergency fund? We went tangent for change. But just bringing it back then, you've got to have an emergency fund. You've got to have something to fall back on. It might be credit cards. It might be savings. It might be an ability to go and get, that's how we got there. It might be an ability to go and get another job. It might be an ability to raise money. That makes me uncomfortable as heck, by the way. You know, people brag about, oh, we raised 200 million. Like, and? It's not your goddamn money. It doesn't mean you're a millionaire. It's somebody else's money. Someone's bought here. Here's 200 million quid, Dan. I'd be like, oh. Like, first of all, I know what to do with 200 million quid because we'd invest it in property, right? Easy. But I'd be really nervous because that's not my money. That's somebody else's money. Unless it's for bank's money, which gets screwed. I don't really care. But if it's somebody else's money, I don't want to lose that money for them. So have an ability to either get another job or have some expenses put to one side. Let's just see. Good morning, Arjun. Hope you're well. Is this good stuff for you, by the way? Just let me know. Okay, so next one, number 8, understand the game that is money. And the best book I can advise on this is Rich Dad Poor Dad, Cashflow Quadrant, understanding where you're going to be, understanding income and expenses, assets and liabilities. Go get yourself Cashflow 101. Go play that game. It literally is a game. Understand the game that is money. This is number 8. So, like, we play Cashflow 101. We've not done it for a while, actually. We should invite some friends around and they can play it too. As it gets warmer outside, we play, like, board games on the terrace because it's really warm and things. So we normally do that on the nights. We play Scrabble and all sorts of different games. It's really cool. It's better than just sitting in and watching Netflix all night like we used to do in England. So anyway, understand the game that is money, like, and treat it as a game. Like, how much cash is in your bank account? Like, and if it's £500, how do you get that to be £1,000? If that's £1,000, how do you get it to be a £5,000? If that's £5,000, how do you get it to be £10,000? If it's £10,000, how do you get that to be £50,000? And then work out where that money's going to go in order to generate more cash flow every single month. So every month you're getting an extra £5,000. And every month you're getting an extra £10,000. And every month you're getting an extra £50,000. How do you do that? What is the game of money? How does it work? How does it operate? And the best book is Rich Dad Poor Dad to teach you about income and expenses and assets and liabilities. By far. And if you've not read it for a while, go back and reread it or play the Cashflow 101 game. The money game is so important, and it's just like no one's taught this at school. The reason why no one's taught this at school is because the people teaching it are all in bad debt anyway. We've all got credit cards and loans up to eyeballs. We had a lady who was working as a deputy head, vice principal of a school, and she wanted me to provide her with coaching free of charge because she couldn't afford it. I'm like, what? How much money are you on? Like 40 grand, 50, I don't know how much a VP of a school gets, a deputy head, 40, 50 grand? And you can't live on that. You need to go back and read a couple of books. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it drove me nuts, did that one. Like, I don't mind helping people out, but come on. You know, so, but you've got to understand the game of money. Like, this stuff needs to be taught in schools, but the people teaching it don't understand the game either. We need to get people like me to come in. Heck, we would even do it for free. Give us an audience, we'll speak to anyone. It's just, we're entrepreneurs, we can't help it. Do you know what I mean? Dan, come speak at this old thought zone. We're all in the 90s, don't understand, can't hear anything. Yeah, I'll speak. So this stuff's got to be taught in schools, and it's just not. Like this whole income, liability, assets, expenses, not, it's just not taught at all. But that is no excuse for you not to know how this game works. You're grown-ups. Most of us are grown-ups, and it is your responsibility to understand how this game works, how, where the money comes, and why that's a bad debt, and why that's a good debt, and what the difference is between the two. And if I buy this, why this asset is a better asset class than this asset? Why are property better than stocks and shares, for example? Why is property better than Bitcoin, etc., etc.? You need to be able to answer that at a cocktail party, if asked. Leverage. Generally, and the fact that it's a hardcore asset, so that if the world does end, I can still sell that asset at some point, and I'm in total control over that asset, not somebody else who's in control of Apple, whose share price has tumbled. Okay, so you gotta understand the game that is money. Number 9, build passive income systems for residual income. So passive income, property is a great method of generating cash flow each and every month. And people go, well, why property specifically? Why not stocks and shares? That gives income as well, but it's not monthly income. Stocks and shares will give maybe quarterly income or maybe annual income with a dividend once a year or maybe four times a year. It depends on the stock. I'd stay away from stocks. I don't do it at all. Property is where I'm at. But my passive income now exceeds my outgoings, so I never have to work again. Any work that we do on top then goes back into buying more passive income streams. That's it. It's as simple as that. What is your passive income stream going to be? And like, you should have several, okay? So one of them is like investing in something. It could be a business as a silent partner. It could be a friend's business, although I wouldn't recommend investing in friends. It could be crowdfunding where you're getting a return back. It could be writing a book where you've written it once, but you're getting paid for that book again and again and again. We've got a client who may be watching right now. See if he's still there. Probably is. Yeah, I think he is. So we've got a client who's doing that right now who actually uses us for our social media company, and actually in January sold more books than we did in December, which was their best ever month anyway. So it's really cool, right? But every time that work is now done and all that time that went into building that, by the way, I haven't got a book. I should have done it, but anyway. All that time that went into that is now being paid off infinitely, getting a return on that. And not only that, you're getting a return on the return. You're getting a return because someone buys the book, then reads the book, then they might come and buy some services from you as well. That's yet another passive income stream. Well, it's an income stream. It might not be passive. Depends what it is. But you should be building passive income streams. If you've not got a lot of money, that's okay. What can you do to generate more income off that money? It might not be passive because it's not a lot to begin with. You might start a business using a little bit of seed money, and then that business grows into something where you can step out of the business, but it still runs on its own. In my social media business, I have very little to do with the delivery of that product. Very, very little. I'm kind of front end based, where I'm there's a model, which I'm not going to go into now because it's for paid clients, but there's a model where I do what I need to do, which is speak, communicate, and then I'm working at a higher level, which is in my mind, where I'm looking at spreadsheets, I'm working out, okay, if we did this and did that, that would increase that, but if we change this and added this value here, that's the level that we want to work at. But I don't do the delivery of the product. I'm not creating images, I'm not creating videos and so on. So it's somewhat passive in that I'm not doing all that stuff. And then the continual looking after the clients is done by our content coordinators, one of which we're about to take on another one today, I think, which is really cool because the business is growing. But I don't have anything to do with that. So it's somewhat passive. At some point, we're going to take on salespeople. And at some point, I'll be stepping out of that business and just having a total top-down view of it. So I'll be working very few hours. So you can build a business. Ultimately, it's not passive, because it's not passive like you're investing in Apple, where you've got no opportunity to make any decisions. But that also makes me uncomfortable. That's one of the reasons I don't invest with other people in their businesses, is because I like to have some decision-making ability. You could also argue that Apple have got better decision-making abilities because they're Apple and can afford people who are brighter, more intelligent, more experienced than I am. And I totally get that too. It just makes me feel uncomfortable. But you can start off with a little bit of seed money, build a business, systemize a business, step out of that business, build another business, and then you put a manager in charge of all those businesses. That's how it works. Okay, number 10, last one. Become financially literate by reading and learning. It's like, I speak to so many people and they ask such obvious questions. And I'm like, have you not read this book? And I go, no. Have you read that book on tax? No. Have you read this book on sales? No. Have you read a book on marketing? No. What the hell are you doing? Watching Netflix? Like, you've got to become really financially literate. I can have a really good conversation with people. And actually, it's one of the things I really, really enjoy is speaking to people about money. You know, we get them on a strategy call, for example. We talk about money. And I love talking about it because I'm like, when was the last time you had this level of conversation? Most conversations are down here. This conversation's up here. When was the last time you had this level of conversation? And they're like, never. And I'm like, I totally get it. But you need to start having this level of conversation. You need to be financially literate. You need to be having this conversation with your wife, with your husband, with your partner, with somebody else's partner, I don't care, with your kids, with your school teacher, with anybody, your mum and dad, your friends, your family, your colleagues, your boss. Your boss will be interested in, especially go speak to an owner of a business about money and get their perception on what they want to do and how they're going to do it and why they're doing it. And why they're building this business? What do they want? Well, I'm going to sell it. Great. You know, what's the multiple that you'll sell it for? Like, is it four times the profit? Is it 10 times the profit? What industry goes, what multiple? What work are you moving towards to making it more profitable, to make it increasingly attractive to buy for an investor? So, like, ask all those questions. Get financially literate. Go speak to accountants. I've got some questions to ask my accountant after this podcast. It's only 8:30 in the UK, but after this podcast finishes and once he gets into the office, it's probably there. I've got some more questions to ask us as we're building the business. We need to ask the questions again. My previous letting agency business, it doubled its income for like 4 or 5 years running. Which was pretty amazing. And I think this business that we're in right now is probably going to do the same, if not more, actually. But, you know, having that conversation about that level of business, how do other businesses that are doubling their income every year, how do they respond to this and that and this and something else? How does all that work? That's the level of conversation that you want to be having with your accountant. You've got to be financially literate. You've got to talk about profits. You've got to talk about earnings before tax and interest. You've got to be talking about what's a dividend and how often do you get paid a dividend. You've got to be talking about what's a wrapper, like a pension. What do you mean it's a wrapper? How is it a wrapper? A wrapper, not like 50 cent. Although 50 cent's gone bust, isn't it? So it's 2 cent now. So what about how do ISAs work? You need to know this. Why would I invest in property rather than an ISA when an ISA is tax efficient and property isn't necessarily? What is the difference? You've got to be having this level of conversation. And most people haven't got that level of conversation. Go and hang out with financial advisors. Go speak to a financial advisor. Go read What Money magazine, What Mortgage magazine, What ISA magazine. I don't think that one exists, but you know what I mean? You've got to get educated in all this stuff. Go buy The Motley Fool. I bought my very first Motley Fool book when I was 16. Maybe 17, something like that. Because I always knew that being financially educated, I always knew this, but being financially educated would serve me well. I read the Times Tax Guide, where was that? Maybe 2005, 2006, something like that. Like, That saved me an awful lot of money. You've got to be reading all this stuff. Your level of financial education will determine your level of financial success. Generally, all things being equal, because there's no guarantee, but it increases the probability of success, and that's what this is all about. All right, so we've gone for 35 minutes there. We never, ever go for 35 minutes, but I hope that's useful for you, and we'll catch up with you in tomorrow's podcast. Drop me a message. Let me know if it was useful. My name's Dan Latto. We'll speak to you soon. Take care. Hey, it's Dan here. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate each and every one of you. Please click like or subscribe to the entire podcast.